Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, and this is 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbath Time. Congregation Mount Zion, 12th Hour in Elburn, Texas. Today is August the 3rd, 2025, it is the 11th day of Ab 2029. We'll start our first service today. We're going to be on Time of Greetings, Volume 1. That's going to be, now we're going to go into Volume 1, like Volume, number 11 of Time of Greetings. E.T. Holler, fixed of address, October the 19th, 1946. And, the title of our sermon is Build the Cities, Comfort Zion, Choose Jerusalem. Alright, our prayer thought is taken from the Mount of Blessing, page 161, beginning. We're going to be with biology what? It says, for the will of Yahweh is expressed in the precepts of His holy law, and the principles of this law are the principles of heaven. But in heaven, service is not rendered in the spirit of the legality. When Satan rebelled against the law of the Yahweh, the thought that there was a law came to the angel almost as an awakening to something unthought of. In their ministry, the angels are as servants, but as sons, there is perfect unity between them and their Creator. Obedience is unto them no drudgery. Love for the Yahweh makes their service a joy. So in every soul wherein the Yahshua is as the hope of the glory dwells, His words are re-echoed. I delight to do thy will, O my Yahweh, yea, thy law is within my heart. For the petition, thy will be done on the earth as it is in the heaven, is a prayer that the reign of the evil on this earth may be ended, that sin may be forever destroyed, and the kingdom of the righteousness be established. Then in the earth, as in the heaven, will be fulfilled all the good pleasure of His goodness. We should now pray that the law of Yahweh be written in our hearts, that we obey the law because we want to, not because we have to. That we realize that our keeping of Yahweh's commandments is for our own good. And above all, let us pray that our highest joy may be in doing His will. Thus may the Yahweh will be done on the earth as it is done in the heaven. And the prayer thought. Now we're going to our sermon. It says that Ricky Holler says, in our last Sabbath study, we learned that the prophecy of the Zechariah is applicable unto the two peoples at the two different times. First to the Jews, while they were returning from the Babylon unto Jerusalem, and second to those who in the time of the end are to come out of all nations. Revelation 7:9, 18:4. We also learn that the revival and reformation that took place in the Zechariah's day is a type of a revival and reformation that is to take place in our day, and that the people returning anciently from the Babylon is a type of the peoples returning in the latter days of Babylon, Revelation 18:4. Okay, let us now turn to Zechariah 1:1. In the 8th month, in the 2nd year of the Darius, came the word of the Yahweh unto the Zechariah. Here we are told. Here we are told that the prophet Zechariah was called unto his prophetic office in the second year of the Darius, the king. Why was he called in that particular year? For the answer, we shall turn to Ezra. Then cease the work of the house of the Yahweh, which is at the Jerusalem. So it ceased until the second year of the reign of the Darius, king of Persia. Ezra 4:24. Obviously, Zechariah was called at that particular time because the work of the temple at Jerusalem was curtailed and abandoned, for the Yahweh there for through the prophet Zechariah and Haggai sent a message of the rebuke to the builders and asked them to quickly resume building. Zechariah 1:2-6. For the Yahweh hath been sore displeased with your fathers. Therefore, say thou unto them, thus saith the Yahshua of the host, turn ye unto me, saith the Yahshua of the host, and I will turn unto you, saith Yahshua of the host. Be ye not as your fathers, under whom the former prophets have cried, saying, thus saith Yahshua of the host, turn ye now from your evil ways and from your evil doings, but they did not hear nor hearken unto me, as saith the Yahshua. Your fathers were, where are they? And the prophets go, or do they live forever? But my words and my statutes, which I have commanded my servants, the prophets, did they not take a hold of your fathers? And they returned and said, like as Yahshua the host thought to do unto us, according to our ways and according unto our doings, so hath he dealt with us. For the builders were first reminded that they were in Babylon because their fathers had not obeyed the word of the Yahweh that came unto them through his prophet, that for their sins the temple and their kingdom were destroyed. For the builders were plainly told that if their project was ever to prosper, they would have to avoid the course pursued by their fathers and give the special need unto the prophets Zechariah and Haggai. For the builders promised that they would not walk in the ways of their fathers. It was in the 8th month that Zechariah delivered unto them this testimony, or this reformatory message. The Jews hardly accepted it, prepared the way for another message, and it came within the space of 3 months. Here it is, Zechariah 1:7. Upon the 24th day of the 11th month, which is in the month Sivat, in the 7th year of the Darash, came the word of the Yahweh unto Zechariah. For the son of Zechariah, the son of the Igi, the prophet said, I saw by the night, and behold, a man riding upon a red horse, and he stood among the myrtle trees that were in the bottom, and behind him were the red horses, speckled and white. For the interpretation of this symbolism, we shall read the prophet's for the prophet interrogation and the angel's explanation of it in Zechariah 1:9-11. Then said I, O my master, what are these? And the angel that talked with me said unto me, I will show thee what these be. And the man that stood among the myrtle trees answered and said, these are they whom the Yahshua has sent to walk to and fro through the earth. And they answered the angel of the Yahshua that stood among the myrtle trees and said, we have walked to and fro through the earth, and behold, all the earth sitteth still and is at ease. Since the horses are sent by the Yahshua to walk to and fro through the earth, and since they have the ability to speak, all this very obviously reveals that the horses are symbolical of Yahshua's messengers, of these whom he sends unto the nation. For the red, the speckled, and white several species of the horses depict a group of servants of the varied races and nationalities. The horses, therefore, cannot be taken to symbolize either the Hebrew servants of the Zechariah's day or those of the Yahshua's day, because the Yahshua's servants in those days were all of one race, Jews, not red, speckled, and white, having fulfilled their admission, their horses reported that they had walked to and fro through the earth, and that in the spite of it, the earth is sitting still and at rest, hearing nothing about it. Since it is a known fact that in Zechariah's day, the message bearers were Jews, a people of one race and one nation. The symbolism is positively applicable unto a day in which Yahweh appoints evangelists of various races and nationalities, whom he sent to and fro to the earth unto all nations. All these positive identifications truly point out that the horses represent the first day Adventists who arose between the year of 1833 and 1844, and who then fulfill the symbolical prophecy by the proclaiming the second advent of the Yahshua unto every Christian nation world over, but having confused the cleansing of the sanctuary, Daniel 8:14, the purification of the church, one the work of the judgment for the dead, the harvest by the separating the wheat from the tares, Matthew 13:30. Well, that judgment for the separating the wheat from the tares takes place in the judgment of the living, and that's the time that we just were in, and we just came through starting to separate the wheat from the tares at Kermit, Texas, 2002. But there's something wrong here, because William Miller and his people, they were announcing the cleansing of the sanctuary to start the judgment of the dead in 1844. But and that wasn't the harvest time in 1844. That was just announcing the judgment of the dead. By the separating the wheat from the tares and the judgment of the living time, Matthew 13:30. Well, the William Miller announced the two phases of the judgment, and Ellen G. White had to identify them. Okay. It says 13:30. The good man, or the good fish from the bad, Matthew 13:47-8. The wise virgins from the foolish, Matthew 25:1-12. The sheep from the goats, Matthew 25:32. Well, that takes place in judgment of the living in the 12th hour that we're in now. Ellen G. White took our charge of the Adventist in the 10th parabolic hour, 1844. We took charge of the purifying of the church in the 12th hour, starting in 2002 at Kermit, Texas, the house of David. And that's what we represent. The wedding garment dressed our guests from those who had not the garment, Matthew 22:2-13. The judgment or the judicial work commences first among the dead, bookwork only of the course that the Daniel 7:10, then among the living, actual boldly separation, cleansing, Ezekiel 9, as the Daniel's prophecy of the chapter 8, namely the 2300 days pointed out that the judgment work was to commence in 1844 A.D., but as it was mistakenly understood that the world was to come to an end, and instead they were greatly disappointed when the set time came and nothing happened. So it was that as the set date approached, they returned from their mission fields with full confidence that they had finished their mission, that they had walked to and fro through the earth, and that there was time no longer, that the world was then to end. Concerning the scope of their work, the Great Controversy, page 168, has this to say. For the writings of the Miller and his associates were carried unto the distant lands. Wherever the missionaries had penetrated in all of the world, were sent the glad tidings of the Yahshua's speedy return. Far and wide spread the message of the everlasting gospel. Fear Yahweh and give glory unto Him, for the hour of His judgment is come. Thus it was that the horse's messengers thought their work was finished, but the angel who really knew the facts and saw Yahweh's people still in the captivity, still away from their homeland, while the heathen were at ease, pleaded for action. Zechariah 1:12. Then the angel of the Yahweh answered and said, O Yahshua of the host, son of Yahweh, how long wilt thou not have mercy on Jerusalem and on the cities of Judah, against which thou hast had indignation these 70 years? For the prophet Jeremiah's prediction that the Jews were to spend 70 years in the Babylonian captivity had ended, although they were still in Babylon. But since this symbolical prophecy finds its fulfillment in our day instead of in Zechariah's day, the angel's plea for the mercy on the Jerusalem and on the cities of Judah therefore finds its direct application in this day. There is, however, this parallel for the time of Babylonian captivity overlaps some years the time of the returning unto Jerusalem. In the like manner, John's prediction that the church today should return to the vineyard after having spent 1260 years in the wilderness in the lands of the Gentile, Revelation 12:6, had ended and even overlapped since the year of 1798, and there was no sign as yet for her returning. And as the denomination was in no condition to accept the additional truth, the results are that the one church is still in the wilderness, concerning which inspiration said, if the people of Yahweh had gone to work as they should have gone to work, right after the Minneapolis meeting in 1888, the world could have been won in 2 years and Yeshua would have come. General Conference Bulletin 1892. For this message now, positively declares that her wilderness sojourn is about to end, and that that soon will she stand on the Mount Zion with the 144,000, with the Lamb. Let's do that again. For this message now positively declares that her wilderness sojourn is about to end, and that soon she will be standing on the Mount Zion as 144,000 purified from the advent of church with the Lamb, Revelation 14:1. From this antitypical point of the view is again seen that the angel's plea for the mercy on Jerusalem and the cities of Judah is applicable directly unto the people in our day, and only indirectly unto the people in the Zechariah's day. Zechariah 1:13-14. And Yeshua answered the angel that talked with me with the good words and comfortable words. So the angel that commanded or that communed with me said unto me, Father, I said, thus saith Yeshua the host, I am jealous for the Jerusalem and for the Zion with a great jealousy. Greater than sin, Zion shall be plowed as a field, and Jerusalem shall become heaps. Micah 3:12. The Yeshua expressed his great jealousy for them, and commanded his servants to cry yet, and said, Zechariah 1:16-17, therefore thus saith Yeshua of the host, I am returned unto Jerusalem with the mercy. My house shall be built in it, saith the Yeshua of the host. And a time shall be stretched, and a line shall be stretched forth upon the Jerusalem. Cry yet, saying, thus saith Yeshua the host, my city through the prosperity shall yet be spread abroad, and the Yeshua shall yet comfort Zion, and shall yet through Jerusalem. Since the light on these prophecies is now shining on our pathway for the first time since Zechariah wrote them, and since the message has now been broadcasted throughout Laodicea, the truth that Yahweh at long last has returned, visited with mercies, is very obvious. After the disappointment in the year of 1844, the messengers of the truth and Yeshua were told to cry, yet continue to preach and say, thus saith Yeshua of the host, son of Yahweh, my city through prosperity shall yet be spread abroad, and the Yahweh shall yet comfort Zion, and shall yet choose Jerusalem. After this point in the year of 1844, the message of the truth in Yahshua was told, I done read that. It says, so it was that just as soon as the set date in 1844 passed and the people's hopes failed, the Yahweh encouraged them by the giving of the Sister White a vision of the ingathering of the first fruit, the 144,000. First to get to Mount Zion and there to stand with the Lamb. That's Revelation 14:1. The comfort of Zion and of Jerusalem. So they started out again with a set goal to gather the 144,000 godless servants of the Yahweh, those who were to be used for the ingathering of the second fruit, the immutable multitude out of all nations, Revelation 7:9. But as time went on, rather than working with the Yahweh, the Seventh-day Adventist denomination backslid by the unbelief of the spirit of prophecy, Testimony of Zion 5, page 217. And this lost sight of the truth that was yet to be unfolded and of which is now brought to life. So it was that as soon as the disappointment in 1844 came, which is represented by the little book burning bitter after turning bitter after having been eaten, the angel declared, "Thou must prophesy again before many people and nations and tongues and kings," Revelation 10:10-11. For the Second Advent movement was then reorganized, and the title Seventh-day Advent is given under it. Thus, the Yahweh charged his messengers to cry yet, to proclaim again, to continue preaching the additional life, the judgment for the dead, the cleansing of the sanctuary, Daniel 8:14, the purification of the sanctuary by the blotting out from the books the names of those who are found not eligible for the coming up and the first resurrection, the resurrection of the Holy Ones, Revelation 20:5-6. Here is seen that the inspiration does not once lighten our path clear unto the end, but that it does so step by step that the Yahweh's truth is progressing, that we can never really say we have all the truth to carry us through unto the pearly gates. As to the means which are to make possible the return of the Yahweh's people unto their own land, we shall read Zechariah 1:18-19. Then lifted I up mine eyes and saw, and behold, four horns. And I said unto the angel that talked with me, "What be these?" and he answered me, "These are the horns which have scattered Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem." Anciently, the kingdom of Israel occupied the northern portion of the Promised Land, and the kingdom of Judah occupied the southern portion of the Promised Land, where the former was scattered by the kings of the Assyria, and the latter by the king of the Babylon. Those who returned unto Jerusalem in the days of the Zechariah were from the kingdom of Judah. For the Judahites, in the days of the Zechariah, let's do that again. those who return into Jerusalem in the days of the Zechariah were from the kingdom of Judah, and they are what they call the Jews. Only Judah is called Jews. The rest of the 11 tribes are called Israelites. But as the kingdom of the Israel was assimilated by the nation, or the 10 tribes, it consequently lost its racial and national identity. For the powers that scattered both Judah and Israel are, as you know, symbolized by the four horns. That's about 1:20:21. And the Yahweh showed me four carpenters and said, what come these to do? And he spake, saying, these are the horns which have scattered Judah, so that no man did lift up his head, but these have come to praise them, to cast out the horn of the Gentiles, which lifted up their horn over the land of Judah to scatter it. Here the same powers which scattered Judah and Israel are again seen, not as horns, but as carpenters, not to scatter Yahweh's people, but to build for them and to cast out the horns, the powers of the Gentiles, those who rule the land. Plainly then, on the one hand, the nations which do not rule Palestine are to arise as horns against those who rule Palestine, and on the other hand, they are to rise as carpenters for the people of the Yahweh. Thus will the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. Luke 21:24. Only those who survive the judgment for the living in the house of the Judah, 1 Peter 4:17, those whose names are not blotted out from the book, Revelation 3:5, will comprise the church, among whom are to be with the 144,000 sons of the Jacob, Revelation 7:3-8. And when Michael stands up, then those whose names are left in the book will be delivered from the trouble, such as never was, Daniel 12:1. They are the remnant, the one who escaped alive from the judgment for the living in the house of the Yahweh. Thus the antithetical temple is to be built, Ezekiel 40-43, and the cities are to be spread abroad. Then these godless servants of Yahweh, the first fruits, are to be sent unto the nation that have not heard of the Yahweh's fame. They actually have not heard of the Yahshua's fame, the son of Yahweh, the non-Christian, and they shall declare his glory among the Gentiles and shall bring all their brethren, the second priest that is, all that are to be saved, Revelation 7:9, unto the house of the Yahshua, Isaiah 6:16-19 and 20, unto the purified church of the Yahweh, where there shall be sin no more and no chance taking of being hit by the plague, Revelation 18:4. Blind to this truth, to the judgment for the living, the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua, the day in which all things are to be restored. It says that the letter is sent, or actually I should say the day in which all things are to be restored, the Seventh Day Adventist, the letter is sent, the tares, not the wheat, are seen to be in a sad deception. Read Testimony, Volume 3, page 253, and Testimony, Volume 5, page 217. Unless they awake unto their plight, they will be found wanting and spewed out. For the Jews became blinded because they closed their ears unto the prophets and took no heed to what they said. For the angel of the Lady sent a single man prophet that's in charge of the candlestick of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and the third feeding pastor, Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas, the third feeding pastor, Gilead Center, today, is boastingly saying, I have need neither of the prophet, nor of the more truth, rejecting the prophecy and the message, even before they come, though he well knows that the message of the judgment for the dead is not the last. The judgment for the living is the last. For the book of Zechariah in its entirety has always been a closed book, but as its deep spiritual meaning is now unsealed and clearly brought to the attention of the church, then those who reject it and work against it are doing even worse than the Jews, killing of the prophets and the Yeshua. It is now clearly seen that Yahweh's word lives forever. Man may slay the messengers of the Yahweh, but they cannot destroy his word. It is indeed like the mustard seed, though it be trodden underfoot so that it can no more be searched out than can a mustard seed after it is set into the ground. Yet as soon as the scroll unrolls, it springs out anew. When this message began to unfold, the Lady of Sins tried desperately to kill it, yet it still lives on and grows the faster. They are still trying to kill it, but since they were unable to do so when it was as small and as weak as a tiny blade of a mustard seed, how can they do it now since it has grown and borne fruit? We are therefore not to worry about a possibility of anyone hurting the work of the Yahweh. Neither are we to worry about how we are to get to Mount Zion, how we are to get unto the Mount Zion, but are to make sure to be ready to board the chariot of the Yahweh when the angels cry out, "All aboard!" Let us ever remember that those who once wrecked the ancient kingdom and cast out its people shall now come to build it up and to cast out the horns of the Gentiles who now rule the land. So even our enemies of yesterday, Yahweh puts working for us today. Well, that looks like that's the end of our sermon. This brings in about 36 hour contact. This is the 11th hour call, and it's number 11. Click on the audio, and we're going to close now with a song.